Hello and welcome to another off-season episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I am your host, Tyler, joined by Matt. And today we're going to answer two of the biggest questions going into this season that's coming very, very soon. We're less than 2 months away. And so we're going to talk about an intriguing team and an intriguing player today. We're going to start things off with that intriguing player. That's St. Joseph's Jordan Hall. And to join us to discuss this, I would say, tantalizing possible NBA prospect is Anthony Morelli of A10 Talk and of the Tony Stakes podcast. How are you doing?
Hey, fellas. It is a pleasure to be on the show. I've always been an admirer of the Three Bid League. And as someone who writes about the A10, specifically St. Joe's, a little bit of LaSalle, but hopefully we can get someone to cover for that at the A10 Talk. Really excited. This is a great podcast. You guys have had some great guests on, so I'm lucky to be with some of the greats like Rothstein and Dr. G, so it's an honor.
Well, thank you. This is far overdue, and unfortunately for you, St. Joe's has, let's be honest, sucked in the during the life of this podcast, so not too many days where we're looking to lead the show with the Hawks. But the buzz is abound about Jordan Hall this offseason. Had a very fun freshman season, made the all-conference rookie team. But other than that, didn't exactly jump off the stat sheet. He had a great game in the overtime battle with LaSalle and really showed us a lot of interesting things along with really a total inability to shoot. But this offseason, he started getting a lot of buzz. He decided to transfer to Texas A&M. Then made it to camp for the Team USA U20 team, and then decides a few weeks later he's not going to Texas A&M. He's going to stick around in his hometown of Philly, stick around with St. Joe's, and now we're hearing possible all-conference player, maybe even first-round pick in the NBA draft. I think people might be pushing it a little bit too far, but you've watched him far more than we have. What should we expect this season?
Yeah, so all great points, all very true. I think for Jordan Hall, what you have to expect is he became the leader of the team throughout last year. And he sat majority of the beginning. There was a COVID pause, and I think he was one of the players who had COVID, unfortunately. And then also there was just other players that they paused in January again. So there was just like a really bad start to a season, especially a season where Jordan Hall wasn't a starter. For the first two or three games, he was actually a bench player running the offense on the second unit for St. Joe's. And so when we look at his stats from last year, we think, oh, wow, they're kind of average. He only shot 35% from three. But then you got to realize if we went on a basketball reference today and we looked at the Jordan Hall history, you would note that through November, December, January, tons of games where he's like 0 for 6 from three, 0 for 3 from three. Then you look at the end of the season, and wow, he's shooting 50% on some games. He's 6 attempts, 3 makes. If he plays like that, he stretches the floor. And with that court vision, it's just like this perfect scenario where you have this 6'7 player who can shoot a 3 at 35. If he shot 38%, it's an effective 3-point shooter. Spreading the floor out, running as fast as he can down the court, because he was top 20 in rebounds last year. So imagine him grabbing a rebound, running down the court, court vision everywhere with all these shooters around him. Do I take it to the lane? I'm strong enough. I'm big enough. I can do it. Do I pull up from three and just shoot it? I have that possibility. If I'm shooting 38% from three, that's very reasonable. And not to mention, I can find an open guy. It's a backdoor cut. If we're setting up a half court offense for a modified Princeton, which I would love to see from Billy Lang for once. There's a lot of possibilities with him at the helm of your offense. And I really think you can't let the beginning of that season last year in the stats of the St. Joe season mess with what the vision is in the future for Jordan Hall, and the tangibles are there. And I really do think he's going to be at least all conference top five.
Yeah. Well, so going into his stats too, just over the entire course of the season, you noted kind of an inconsistent start of the year, played a lot of minutes early on, but wasn't really putting up huge stats. But by the end of the year, he averages a respectable 10.6 points per game, especially for a freshman. But like you said, those last five games where he really turned it on, he was averaging 17 a game. Do do you think we're going to see him as a bigger scorer overall this year, or will he still have a main role on the team of being the primary distributor?
Yeah, well, I think we got to remember Ryan Daly was on that on those last five games. He was actually in the game, and Jordan Hall scored all those points. So I think that one answer I can see is, yeah, he has to be the lead scorer. In another world, I see, well, Taylor Funk actually was a really good scorer for the team and was quietly one of the more improved players in the A-10 last year and is returning veteran season guy. And I worry that Ryan Daly took the pressure off Jordan Hall, and all of a sudden teams had to cover Ryan Daly. He was just too good. And Jordan Hall had a little bit more, less double teams, more freedom to do what he wants. So I think the key to Jordan Hall is, I think he has to be the passer first. He is the point guard. That is your job, is to pass the ball first. But if Taylor Funk is as good as I think he's going to be, I can expect Jordan Hall to be the number two option. Just like Delonte West was a great player, he was the number two scoring option. I think Jordan Hall could be actually a better player than Delonte West, but it's just, that just goes to show, when you have two great scorers, it actually benefits both of them rather than just all the focus on one person, i.e. Ryan Daly struggling last year and a little bit of this year to score on his own.
Yeah, and even amidst a great stretch to end the season, his final 12 games of the year, he averaged 13.3 points. And by the way, he was only at 6.4 going into that stretch. So really turned his season around quickly right around New Year's, as we saw from a few young players in the conference. So if that's what he's doing in his great scoring games, I certainly don't expect to see 20 from him very often, but he also finished second in the conference in assists. The passing is clearly the most special part, and anyone who has thrown him on can see that. But to you, what else do you see can make him special? Because just being a great passer is not a ticket to even being an all-conference player. You got to have more.
Yeah, and I think I spoke about this, the rebounding. I actually think that can be a sneaky part of his game, because St. Joe's has really drastically improved their size. You know, Taylor Funk was the one who had to be boxed out every time down the floor because he was the largest player for St. Joe's. Now with Obina and Coleman, you have two options to throw in at center, true centers, 6'10", 7-footers. And then you still have Taylor Funk playing the true power forward position, which he's meant to do. So those two guys are going to be focused on for boxing out. And I easily see Jordan Hall being a productive guy, going after those 50-50 balls, grabbing those rebounds that are really important, and turning it around and running down the court to guys like Eric Reynolds, who's this 4-star recruit, is going to be really good for St. Joe's. That's when that court vision starts to play into his hand. And I mean, I said, baby, Tyler, I had you on my show. I said, baby Ben Simmons, which was a little crazy even for me back then. But as someone who's kind of gotten tired of Ben Simmons as a Sixers fan, but I will say this, I've seen that type of play in person, the point guard who can grab the rebound and he's already halfway down the court with the ball in his hand. You don't have to find him. You don't have to worry about full court presses. If that's the case, your ball handler automatically has the ball, can break full and half court presses. So I really think rebounding is actually going to be super powerful for this team, especially if it means we're getting the ball in the point guard's hand that much faster.
So I'm so glad you brought up Simmons, because I wanted to go there next. And you're a Sixers fan. You've talked about, you've had your trials and tribulations with Simmons. And let's be honest, the skill set is at very different points, but Hall does play the game in a very similar way. He has the same weakness. He has the same strength. They're just at different levels. And one of the big Ben Simmons questions is, oh, does he need to not have a center to succeed? We've seen Jordan Hall succeed in an offense that's kind of tailor-made for this type of guy. Taylor Funk at the five, shooters all over the place, and makes it easy to grab up rebounds when you don't really have a true big man on the court. So are you worried at all that St. Joe's having a true center could actually cause a regression in Hall's game?
I like to think it wouldn't, but I can see that possibility, and I guess the only benefit to me as a St. Joe's fan is the fact that the roster's so, I guess I would say deep, but not deep in the sense of there's so many great talented guys. I would say deep in the sense of we can do many things. There could be many faces to this team. And so I like to think Billy Lang can make that adjustment, where if Jordan Hall does struggle with a center, which we don't know, like I can't, it would just be speculation. I like to think that, okay, well, I can't play Jordan Hall with Obina, so I'm going to make sure that when Jordan Hall is on the floor, Taylor Funk's the center because he can sit in the corners and spread the floor out a little bit better than a true center would. And then I would have Demir Bishop or Cameron Brown or any one of those guys run the offense with a true center in place. I think Demir Bishop would really, really benefit from a center, especially from a setting picks standpoint for St. Joe's to get to the rim a little bit easier. But if that does happen, I guess my point is, well, that's why we have a coach. Like, his job's to figure that out. And if it doesn't work, you have to make sure that Jordan Hall is the guy that you prioritize in your offense. I'm not prioritizing a fifth-year transfer with regards to strategy when I know I have a guy who is this talented. And if it doesn't work out with the center, I'm modifying for Jordan Hall's benefit.
Of course, the big issue in that, because it sounds great offensively, but we now have 2 years of evidence that playing Taylor Funk at the five is just a defensive nightmare. And it's basically been a necessity for the Hawks. So Lang will have to try to balance that. And I personally feel like if you have the right shooters around, and having Funk at the four really helps with that, Hall should be able to play with a center, especially if one of those big guys can be an effective role player. Like literally like R-O-L-L rolling to the basket.
Yep, exactly. Because he's going to find the assist then if he can't get to the rim. And then if you put Forrest out on the three, he's a really effective three-point shooter, no doubt about it. And then, I don't know, we can figure out who's going to be the last guy. I have no idea what the starting lineup's going to look like. I think Billy Lane's going to have a hard time getting that together. But yeah, I agree. If you're really that great, you can't struggle with a center on the court either. So while we're having this conversation, if he struggles with a center, I don't know how he's going to play in the NBA, because guys in the NBA who are centers, they still roll to the basket, and you still have to find – Rudy Gobert is not the greatest shooter in the world, but teams make sure that they make them an effective player on the court. So I don't like to do NBA analogies to college basketball. It's actually one of my more bigger pet peeves, funny or not. But it is true. If Jordan Hall wants to be an NBA player, he's just going to – he has to learn. There's no excuse. Otherwise, you're not an NBA player. So
let's go there then. People have been talking about Hall as a potential first-round pick this offseason. And I believe I don't know if I've said it on the pod or just in text threads, but I've personally said if he doesn't get the three-point shot to 35%, then this is just not even worth having the discussion about. But do you see a future for him in the league? What needs to happen for that path to start to be carved out? Especially going back to St. Joe's and not having the SEC exposure he could have had.
Yeah. So I'm glad to announce he did shoot 35% last year. So I have a feeling he's going to improve to 38%, 39%, maybe even 40% if he's smart about the threes he shoots. You know, it's all about managing and not just firing them off like the team likes to do, which I can't stand. Be poignant with the 3-point shots you take. And then to go to your other question, wait, can you just repeat it? I kind of lost track on that. What was that other question you were going to say?
And I'll clarify too. Yeah, he finished at 35% because he was scalding hot for about 2 weeks at the end of the year.
39% in conference play, so he did get better.
I'm a little skeptical of the sample size, but no, the other piece was just what has to happen for him to properly put himself on the path to being in the NBA? Maybe not next year, because I seriously doubt next year, but 2023 draft, 2024, if he decides to stay all 4 years.
Yeah. So thank you for the clarification. I think I know what I'm going to say is this. It's okay to be in college for 3 years. I'm a firm believer in that. There are players who are in the NBA making big plays who were 3-year players. Even now, like Bridges, he played Villanova for a decent amount of time. He's making, you know, good plays in the NBA finals. So if you're a good player, you're a good player, just plain and simple. What does he need to do? He already has the ball handling, but sometimes he's a little loose with the ball. And I think he needs to tighten that up. If he plays in the NBA, he's going to be a wing. So you got to show that you can, your ability to have a layup and drive the lane is going to be like critical for me, because let's use Ben Simmons as an example. The guy can't attack the rim. He's got all that size. He has no finesse around the rim. If Jordan Hall wants to be a 6'8 player in the NBA, and with the skill set he has of court vision and ball handling and hopefully shooting, if it improves the way we think it will, finishing at the rim is probably the most important thing for me, because I want to see that from him. I want to see the guy Ryan Daly was the guy who would attack the rim for St. Joe's. I want to see him become the guy who attacks the rim for St. Joe's. And as we were saying earlier, is it Taylor Funk or Jordan Hall that's the lead scorer? Well, if I want Jordan Hall to progress into the NBA, he's got to be the lead scorer. He's got to be the one who takes at least 10 shots a game, and 8 of them have to be within the rim. So I think that's – it's aggression. It's attacking attitude, and I think that's what I want to see from him.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because just looking at his splits, you know, below 50% at shots at the rim, which really for a 6'7 athlete like he is, that's not great. I think the three-point percentage, honestly, at his height – personally, I'm not very concerned with that, especially with what he did at the end of the year, but definitely agree. He would, if he improves as an attacker and can consistently make those shots, that would be go a long way for him being that leading scorer for St. Joe's and just improving his overall offensive game.
Yeah, and before we go into just some tidbits on the Hawks as a whole, I will ask you the central question of this discussion here. How good will Jordan Hall be this year?
I want to say he's going to be player of the year. Call me crazy. But for him to do that, the Hawks have to be good.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a Trey Mitchell situation where they're not top number one. And so you're not in that conversation for best player in the conference, no matter how good you are, versus, you know, Bones Highland, pretty good player, turns out to be a very good player on a team that's very good. So that's kind of the key to that discussion. So I'm going to say all conference is what I expect from him. And an award that's not official, but I would like to see is I want you to lead or be one of the leaders in the country in assists. Not an easy thing to do, but with the way that college basketball is shaping up, all these transfers are going here, there, and everywhere. And St. Joe's has a team where these guys should know each other very, very well. And so that only plays to the synergy, the chemistry, whatever you want to call it. And so I think Jordan Hall should not have an excuse for at least being top 10 in assists in the country and being an all-conference player.
Well, he's got a lot to potentially try to accomplish this season. But turning our attention to St. Joe's in general, it's now year 4 of the Billy Lang era, and one of the most storied programs in the conference hasn't avoided the pillow fight at all in that time. I don't think we need to go into Lang's job security. I think everyone would guess if they're bottom four again, he's going to be walking out the door at the end of the season. So we'll talk more specifically. Do you expect the Hawks to actually be at least competent on defense this year with those new centers coming in that we talked about?
Yes. They're going to be competent on defense in the sense that we know that they could not protect the rim last year. Like, it was just out of the question, and that affects rebounding, and that just defense is so critical to being a good team. I'm a firm believer in it. It's why I liked watching VCU so much. As much as I was ready for the Phil Martelli change, the one thing I could never say that Phil's teams weren't good at, it was defense. They always played hard on defense. During the Martelli era, it was always, how are we going to score? That was the big question. And when we finally got a guy like DeAndre Bembry, all of a sudden the team's really good. But the guys played hard on defense. And so I think we're flashy on offense. We like to shoot a lot of threes. And there's a ton of issues and reasons why St. Joe's doesn't win that are caused on the offensive side of the ball. But for me, the defensive side is what needs to improve. And I think having two centers that you can rotate in and out are good. Worst case scenario, you throw Anton Jansen out there and hope for the best. I mean, and Taylor Funk could go back to playing the five, like not the whole game, but you can still rotate him in there for a few minutes. It gives you rest, gives you the ability to spread the fouls out a little bit more evenly, because that's always kind of like the big management thing as a coach. And so I think Billy Lang has to improve as a coach on the defense, but I think that these two centers really just help the depth on that side of the roster. Yeah, we have a ton of guards, we have a ton of wings, but on defense, the center is the most important position, and luckily we now have two of them.
St. Joe's also has a couple really intriguing freshmen coming in this year. They've got a guard, Eric Reynolds, who's the Hawks' highest recruit in a while. And then they also more recently, got Kasper Klaksek out of Poland, who's a 6'8 playmaker. Seems like he can do a lot of different things on the court. Do you think these guys are going to have an impact on the season?
Yeah, so I think Klasper. I always worry if I'm not pronouncing his name right. Unfortunately, my Polish isn't the best. But I think Klasper honestly has the most to gain from this situation. If he's playing on the second unit, maybe he can take some form of like leadership in that position with guys like Ramir Moore. We're talking about defense. Ramir Moore is a guy who plays hard, and so does Cam Brown. Those two guys are like, you know, they come off the bench. They bring so much energy to the team. I love those guys. And so I think he would really benefit to playing with them. The one I do worry about, though, is Reynolds, because you think Jordan Hall is going to have the ball in his hand a lot, and that worries me. And so I hope that it doesn't infringe on Reynolds' development. I hope it's like a Ryan Daly, Jordan Hall situation. They share the ball evenly. They know where their bread is buttered, in what situations, who controls the ball, who controls the tempo. And so I think for Reynolds, while he is very talented, and I hope that he is as good as expected, he could have a better year, or he could be the rookie of the year. He's that good. It's all about the relationship between the two ball handlers. And so I think that's going to be really important to him, where Casper, he has a much better chance of leading a second unit that's going to be very good. And so I have high hopes for him as well.
So beyond Hall, who we obviously just talked about, and Taylor Funk, who, correct me if I'm making an incorrect assumption here, I'm figuring we're just going to kind of see the same Taylor Funk season that we've seen all his time in college. Plenty of made threes, lots of rebounds, and just kind of doing those two things all game. But outside of those two, who do you expect to be among the leaders of the Hawks?
Yeah, so I'm hoping Taylor Funk, and last year he showed a little bit more improvement with his ability to score around the rim, but of course I would like to see more of that. So I think outside of those two guys, I am a big Cameron Brown fan.
I still am too.
I remember watching him. I've seen him in person a bunch of times, like playing. And I think what gets me is that I feel like he's been in the shadow of a lot of guys at St. Joe's, but he makes really smart decisions. And I think that's really important. And he's the type of guy who you would think comes in and leads the offense, because there wasn't that many great ball handlers, and he started his freshman year. And then of course the roster got a little deeper and his minutes diminished, but you saw Billy Lang go to him more than Demir Bishop in a lot of cases. And I think there's a reason for that. And I think Cameron Brown, while I like to see Demir Bishop get a little bit better, I think he was a little underwhelming last year because of getting adjusted to the team. I think Cameron Brown is the one that I want to see really improve, really be above 10 points a game. I don't know what he averaged last year, but like consistent score. If we need to start him because we need this win, I'm putting him in as a starter because I know that he can score and finish at the rim, which he has shown to do. And he sacrifices his body, him and Ramir Moore. I don't know why I keep going to those two, but the both of them sacrifice their bodies all the time going up to the rim. And I love it. That's such like Philly grit. And so for me, it's Cameron Brown. He really needs to be the guy who's a bright light for this team.
Yeah, I think he could end up being critical to kind of making the starting lineup gel too, where Hall and Funk, and especially if Bishop and Forrest are playing a lot, they're going to be responsible for the main scoring, the main passing too. They're going to need Cam Brown to just make some shots off the catch and give them that grit. So I guess we'll close it on this. Three straight trips to the pillow fight for the Hawks. Do they break the streak this season?
Man, you guys, I was going to write a whole article preseason. I'm going to predict out St. Joe's games, but I'll give it to your fans. I'll let them know what my prediction is.
How about this? Spare us the detail. Save that for your piece. You just teased it. Everyone's excited to hear it now. Give us the rough. Where should we roughly expect the Hawks to finish this year?
Yeah. I think if they're in the 10-7 range, which I think is very reasonable, Billy Lang saves his job, or secures his job is a better word. And I think that they build, if that happens, they're 10-7, they're building their path for the next 2 to 3 years, or 1 to 2 years after that, to be top three title contenders in the A-10. So I'm thinking 10-7 range. If you're below that, I don't know where this program's going to go, because it's not going to be pretty. But if you meet those goals or you exceed them, things are okay.
I don't even know. I mean, just thinking about it, though, I think we can almost write off last season. I mean, every team went through their struggles, but with St. Joe's, they lost a big advantage with the Hawk having to flap his wings up in the stands, couldn't even travel to the away games. Hopefully they get that back this year, and that helps the Hawks return to their normal status toward the top of the A-10.
Yeah, and I just think, like, if you look at the teams, if you just think about, like, Fordham's not going to be better than St. Joe's. LaSalle is not going to be better than St. Joe's. I don't think George Mason is better than St. Joe's. I know they got a new coach. Let me tell you, getting a new coach ain't easy. I've learned that. And mm-hmm. we've got players who have been around the block a little bit longer now. And I think that that benefits us. And then you got to think of a fourth team that St. Joe's is better than. And I don't know if we could name, I don't want to sit here and think about programs all day, but I think that St. Joe's is at least above the top four. I mean, the bottom four. So
there you have it. Jordan Hall, all conference. No pillow fight for St. Joe's in a magnificent stepping stone year. Anthony Morelli, thank you for joining us. Where can people hear your terrific work? Hear or read? Some people still like to use their eyes.
Yes, the original medium. You can find me at a10talk.com, writing about St. Joe's and LaSalle as well. But St. Joe's, that's my alma mater, so I tend to care about them a little bit more. You can find me on my podcast, Tony's Takes. Just search it on iTunes, YouTube, whatever. We do a live show on YouTube, which is always fun. And you can follow me on Twitter at @jelly_Morelli. So that's where you can catch me. And thanks for having me on, guys. I really do appreciate it.
We appreciate having you on. If anybody has not seen Anthony's great work, maybe you missed it because St. Joe's just hasn't given you much to go searching for. But the Hawks will be better this year, and you're going to need to follow this man for the proper St. Joe's content. Thanks for joining us. All right, we are now being joined by Noah Goldberg of ESPN Richmond, who is going to answer the big question, why should we believe in Richmond? Thanks for joining us again, Noah.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me.
So I guess we told you what we want you to talk about. And, you know, the Spiders are kind of the consensus number two right now. Plenty of reasons why. You bring back basically five starters, four different guys who could potentially be all-conference picks, depending on how you view Sherrod or Burton. But for those of us who really watched Richmond last year, quite frankly, we weren't impressed. And part of that was injuries. Part of that was the weird COVID season. But this team left a really bad taste in my mouth, at least. And I'm a little skeptical. So sell me and sell the other skeptics on the Spiders and why they're contenders.
Well, yeah, you should absolutely be skeptical, and I'm skeptical, and I think every Richmond fan is skeptical, right? Because doesn't the storyline going into this year kind of feel like what it's been like for the past 10 years? Like, look at all these reasons we have to believe in this team. For everything on paper says they're the number two team in the conference. They're totally a tournament team. But you have a couple injuries here. If a couple of these things don't go right, you could totally see this being a bottom half team. You know, probably not, but it could happen. It kind of feels like that's the storyline every year. And that's what happened last year. You know, 2 years ago, we all know what happened with the season that got canceled because of COVID. We know how great this team was. You know, Nick Sherrod led the conference in three-point shooting. You dominate Duquesne in your final A-10 game going into the conference tournament, and then COVID hits. We know what happened that season. And in last season, it's kind of, you know, I'm going to go through the reasons you should be skeptical of this team are at the same time the reasons they could be good. And that's going to be the theme of this year, is if they hit those marks. So I look back at last season, right? And you know how we started the season. You get the win at Kentucky, the number 10 team in the country. You're riding high. You're ranked number 19th in the country for 2 weeks, and it feels like nothing could go wrong for Richmond. We all know what happens after that. That started the season from November 29th to January 9th. Richmond was 9-3. They had a road win over a top 10 team in the country. They only had one conference loss. That's a 3-point loss on the road to St. Bonaventure. And they'd picked up a really good neutral site win against Loyola Chicago that looked good then and ended up actually looking better as the season moved on. So at January 9th last year, it, as sour as we are on that season, that's a good sample size, November 29th to January 9th, where they had a lot of successes. They're pretty much still consensus a tournament team by all metrics to most people. And even though you have that Hofstra loss towards the end of that stretch, that's still a tournament resume at that point. That's when season, that's when things change. So you have this COVID pause that happens. I believe January 9th, they played George Mason. That was their last win. And then the second COVID pause, but this is the first one that rips through the team happens. After that COVID pause, they lose to LaSalle at home. And that's when things really turned for this team. And you just get this theme throughout the year of after that stretch, like they couldn't find consistency really again the rest of the way. And that's going to be the big thing for them this year. Tyler Burton, that's the biggest factor that gave you that success in that 9-3 stretch up until January 9th. That guy, even though you had some struggles after there, you had some struggles between the George Mason game and then the third COVID pause with St. Louis. But all through that time, you know, Tyler Burton's what really propped them up. When this team lost Nick Sherrod, a guy that led the conference in three-point shooting, you know, it's big question marks. This guy's going to be a sophomore starting with a bunch of seniors in maybe the most difficult offensive system with that kind of Princeton-influenced offense. I hate to call it the Princeton style because they do a lot of things differently. But the big thing is, like, is that guy going to be able to figure out? And he really did. And not only was he competent, but he very specifically did the thing you're losing in Nick Sherrod. He was shooting 4 threes a game and hitting at a 40%+ clip. And what people don't realize is Tyler's doing this at 6'7". He's doing it from 5-6 feet behind the three-point line. And that takes so much pressure off Jacob Gilliard and Blake Francis. And it opens so many things up for them, much as Nick did. After the St. Louis COVID pause, I'm going to read to you how Tyler's final five games went immediately following that COVID pause. After a year when he was averaging 12-plus points a game and 7.5 rebounds. Coming out of that COVID pause on February 17th, you play VCU, you lose 68-56. Tyler scores 2 points, 0-3 from deep. February 20th against Duquesne, 16 points, 3-6 from three. Pretty good, bounce back, your team wins. But then after that, the next three games, UMass. The team wins, Tyler scores 4 points and goes 0-2 from deep. Next game against St. Louis, Tyler scores 7 points, 0-4 from three. You lose by 5. That was a huge loss that probably did the nail in the coffin on any tournament chances. Then you March 1st, you play St. Joseph's, and that really killed them. They lose to St. Joseph's at home to finish the year. 76-73, Tyler, 7 points, 0-1 from 3. Not only is Tyler's production down, he's consistently scoring less, which hurts you. He's not shooting threes, which obviously in turn takes away so much spacing from Blake and Gilliard. And then you amplify that by the fact not only is Tyler not creating spacing, that's in comparison to the alternative, which is Nick Sherrod, who creates a ton of spacing for you. So that's the biggest X factor this year. If Tyler is the Tyler of the first half of last season, the Tyler of the November 29th to January 9th, the before SLU COVID pause, you know, that could do wonders for them. And then when you throw in Nick in there instead of Blake, not only is Nick adding shooting, because Blake was a volume shooter, but he was not by any means efficient. You add this volume efficient shooter in Nick, you add length, he's 6'4", Blake was 6 feet, right? So defensively, even if Nick's not that quick, we really saw the Spiders defensively get killed last year of, you know, the West Virginia game, Braden Norris, Loyola Chicago, little guards for other teams that were just shooting the ball over the Spiders' backcourt. They couldn't get a stop. So by you add length with Nick, you know, you add that with Tyler. If he can be consistent, then there's every reason in the world to think they can be that team that started out 9-3, the team from two seasons ago that had the best three-point shooter in the A-10 and was a tournament team. So it's all these ifs. It's you've got to go back, and we've seen even last year through the struggles, we saw the high points. We saw when the offense was rolling. They've got to find consistency. Because also in those five games that they're really struggling, they were having really bad halves and really good halves. The final two losses of the regular season, they scored 24 points in the first half against St. Louis, just 24 points. That ends up being a 5-point loss. If you can score 29 in the first half, which still isn't great, you win that game. In the last game against St. Joseph's, you score just 25 in the first half and you lose by 3. You score 28 in the first half and you probably win that game. And against Duquesne, the very next game of the A-10 tournament, you're leading at halftime, and then you score, I think they only scored, 25 points in the second half, and then you lose that game to Duquesne. So it's all these things, but at the end of the day, whether it's Tyler's three-point shooting, whether it's injuries, guys staying on the court. It's consistency. They've got to, whatever it is they do, they've got to put it together. And we've seen all those pieces. So that is why I say, for the very same reasons, we should be skeptical. We don't know they're going to do all these things consistently. We should be skeptical. But if they do all those things, we know what the ceiling is. And the ceiling is a top A-10 team and a tournament team.
So personally, and I think you'd agree with this, that losing Francis, replacing him with Sherrod, and now playing Sherrod and Burton as your two wings together, makes this team probably fit together a lot better. Definitely keeps the ball flowing more. For me, the one kind of concern that comes to my head, because I never even voted Francis all conference either the last 2 years. I actually think that his scoring numbers made him a little overrated, but he gave them that little kick that they needed that Gilliard and Golden couldn't, where if the defense was elite and they just needed a bucket, Francis could go and get them that bucket. Do they have a way of doing that this year?
Yeah. So again, you know, there's the Tyler X factor of, you know, I think they would love to see Tyler become that guy, just because as good of offensive players as they have aside from him, just with the physical, just his abilities as a 6'7" guy that can shoot and get to the lane. You'd love to see him develop into that guy that can go be a bucket getter, but we haven't seen him do that consistently yet. You can't count on it. And I think you're absolutely right. I think Blake was that guy. And I think I look back to, I think it was 2 years ago, they had a really close loss at St. Bonaventure and they were down double digits. And Blake, in the course of the last minute and a half, it made it like a one possession game. He just went off and he's that guy. I think you're right. But I think Blake also puts you in those spots more often by being out there too, of needing a guy to go out and get you buckets, of putting you in that close game, because like you said, it's a fit thing. I think a lot of their struggles, and again, going back to the inconsistency, both game to game and within games, is you just saw these offensive stalls where they were just sputter. And a lot of times that would happen with, you know, Blake just taking a lot of ill-advised threes, mid-range shots, early in the shot clock. I remember specifically, I believe it was the St. Louis game, they had an offensive possession where they had three straight offensive rebounds. How often does Richmond do that? Not very. And Blake took like two threes off those offensive rebounds within 3 seconds. So it's just possession killers. So yes, you're going to lose that bucket getter of, in this moment, we need a bucket. But by adding Nick, you're less likely to be in that spot, because I don't think you're going to see the offense sputter and stall as much as we saw it before. He's going to keep the ball moving so well. And again, you know, when Blake and Nick were out there together 2 years ago, you didn't see it happen because, again, Nick's creating so much spacing for Gilliard and Francis. But when you have Tyler out there with Blake and Gilly, and Tyler hits the struggles that he does, and then Blake kind of gets this volume idea in his head, he just really could bring the offense down at times. So I think if you compare Blake to Nick one-on-one, you know, Blake's probably the more pro-ready guy. He's probably the higher level prospect, maybe better one-on-one player. And yeah, they don't have that bucket getter. And that's probably one of the question marks you have to fill this year. But I think that substitution has got to be a net gain for you offensively as a team.
Yeah, and I think overall, I'm not overly concerned about Richmond's offense, even though you do lose a big-time volume scorer. If you look at last year, they actually, you could make the case that the Spiders were a better offensive team overall. Their three-point percentage went up. They actually turned the ball over less. I think the main concerns really in what set last year's team apart from 2 years ago is their defense took a huge hit. They had one of the worst opposing effective field goal percentages allowed in the conference, gave up a ton of three-pointers, got dominated inside at times. My question really is, do you think the defensive struggles last year were mainly due to the absence of Nick Sherrod, or is there another missing piece that the team needs to address this year?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head here. I mean, you look at the step they took 2 years ago, they were the most efficient defense in the conference. Number one, 92.9, according to KenPom, defensive efficiency. Last year, they were 10th, 101.4. That's a huge drop-off. And it's weird because going into last season, kind of some of the thoughts and questions going around in the Richmond community were, okay, what are the biggest differences with Tyler versus Nick, right? And immediately you think you probably lose some on offense because of what Nick does as a shooter. And at that point, we had never seen Tyler shoot threes, so it was actually a pleasant surprise he did. But you think you're getting no shooting, but he's 6'7", he rebounds. So you're like, all right, we're going to get defense added. But it kind of ended up being the reverse, because even though Tyler's a really big, physical, gifted player, he was a sophomore. You know, he's still filling into his body. He's long and lanky, and he'd really get lost kind of mentally sometimes defensively. So he had the defensive ability. But like you said, like, Nick knows the system so well. Nick is not going to get a chase down block, but he's not going to have some mental mishap, lose his man, and end up exposing Gillian and Blake. Those are some things that Tyler could do at times. So going into this year, I think there's reason to be optimistic they could turn around, because obviously, like we mentioned, the issues with the lack of size in the backcourt, you're swapping Blake for Nick. So that addresses height issues, first of all. You can just have Gilly focus on that smaller guard versus having 2 6-foot guards. On top of that, Tyler's now a year older. He's, you know, hopefully mentally, he's not going to have those mental mishaps. And the defensive ability is already there for Tyler. He's the best, one of the most electric shot blockers in the conference. He's an unbelievable rebounder. Physically, he's going to do it. This year, let's see if he can get the system down out of the mental mishaps. And again, like we said, what Nick's going to bring to the table of mentally understanding the system, not making mistakes. So if those things culminate, there's no reason they can't turn this thing around defensively. But they have to culminate, and we don't know if that's going to happen. There's no guarantee. I think Keith Dambrot said it best a couple of years ago, just because you bring everyone back doesn't mean you get better. There's no guarantee Tyler's going to be better just because he's a junior now defensively. So we're going to have to see.
So one of the other big questions, because I think we know that now, of course, we're trying to answer the question right now, can they be great? We know the 5 starters will be really good as long as they can all stay out there and stay healthy. What is going to happen with the bench this year? Because that's been a disaster for 10 straight years, 15, like maybe before most of us were born.
Yeah, no, that's the huge thing. And I think that's why the expectations were so high last year, was not the, even after you lose Nick, it wasn't about the starting five. It's, we all knew how good that was. We've been watching this group for like the starting five has been together like 10 years, I feel like now. It was the bench. It was, wow, you're going to have Andre Gustafsson coming off the bench before Nick got hurt. You're thinking, we're going to get Tyler Burton coming off the bench. He wasn't known around the A-10 at that time, but everyone around here had seen his ability as a freshman. We were very excited about what he could be. It's like, you're going to get those two guys off the bench and Connor Crabtree, a transfer that came in from Tulane that can shoot the heck out of the ball from three. And when you're a team that struggles with offensive inconsistency, that's huge to get that off the bench. Crabtree gets hurt, only plays 4 games last year. Then you lose Nick, which bumps Tyler off the bench. And really, you don't have many significant contributors at all last year off the bench, other than Andre Gustafsson and then plugging and playing Sal, Caressi, and Matt Grace to fill in at the forwards. So this year, they should have a really deep team. We saw in the NIT towards the end of last season, a couple of their freshmen, Isaiah Wilson, who was their highest rated recruit, he's a guard. They're hoping to make him the next kind of Gilliard for them. Point guard that distributes, really aggressive on-ball defender. We saw him start a couple games in the NIT. Their defensive numbers are really, really good when he was on the floor. So that's a guy you bring off the bench this year that could very well see 10 to 15 minutes a game. Jai Bailey, again, kind of came on the NIT there. He was a former Wake Forest commit. That's a guy that's, I want to say 6'6", 6'7", that plays the guard. He's got a lot of length, a lot of bounce, a lot of defensive upside. So when you add those guys in, you know, if Connor Crabtree can stay healthy, that's a big if. The guy's had 2 hip surgeries, a foot stress fracture, and a groin injury. So that's a huge if. But their offensive numbers in the 4 games he played last year were insane. He had the highest offensive rating on the team. He had the highest player efficiency rating on the team. So he clearly can glide into their system very well, even though he didn't have a lot of chemistry at that time. So again, these are a lot of ifs, which is why we have to be skeptical and optimistic. These things all have to hit, and they haven't yet. But you get Connor giving you shooting off the bench. You know, Andre Gustafsson's going to miss the first couple games this year coming off groin surgery, but he shouldn't miss a ton of time. His, you know, what he brings to the table facilitating as a defender, you get the 2 young guys. They have a lot of freshmen this year that probably won't see a lot of time this year, so I'm not really thinking too much about them. But realistically, this team could consistently go 5 deep into their bench. This could be a legitimate 10-man rotation between 3 or 4 wings, and then again, Caressi and Grace, coming in to fill in for KO and Golden on that side of the ball. So, you know, who knows? A lot of their bench players have foul trouble. Sal Cressy's a guy that's had a lot of foul trouble. Andre Gustafson's had a lot of foul trouble before. Connor Crabtree has a lot of injury struggles. And then you have two guys that were freshmen last year that only played a couple of games. So a lot of big ifs, a lot of big question marks. But there's reason, again, to be optimistic, and they could go deep. And not just deep, but actually see some production offensively from your bench, which, like you guys have said, I feel like we haven't seen that in 15 years here.
So we'll close it out with this, give you a chance to make a little bit of a prediction here. So you've Golden, you have Gilliard, you're raving about Tyler Burton. By the time people have heard this, they've surely also heard John Rothstein rave about Tyler Burton. So let's say Richmond wins the league here and they end up with the player of the year. So try to envision that scenario in your head. What will it take for the Spiders to win the league? In that circumstance, who is most likely to be the player of the year?
Oh, that's a good question. I think who's going to be the most important player to Richmond and who would win that award should they win the conference are probably two different answers. I think Nick Sherrod is the most important player to this team. I don't think he's the best player. I think he's the most important player to this team. Who do I think would win Conference Player of the Year? I think it's probably up to chalk, but you have to go with Gilliard or Golden, and I lean towards Gilliard. He's going to break the all-time NCAA steals record. He's probably going to shatter it this year, quite honestly. I think he needs like less than 20. It'll never be broken 10.
Again if he stays healthy all year.
Yeah, so there's no reason, and the way we saw him come on as a scorer last year towards the end of the year, especially in the NIT with, you know, Golden was out, but I think more so seeing that Blake wasn't in there. You know, we saw Gilly get really aggressive. He took 18 three-point shots in their two NIT games. I think he was like 5 of 10 and maybe like 3 or 4 of 8 in the second game, scoring 18 and 20 points in those games. So if that continues now that Blake is gone permanently this season – we see a more aggressive Gilly, kind of like that. You see the scoring numbers could go up. I think he only scored like 11 or 12 a game last year. So if you see those scoring numbers jump because of that, if we see him shoot the ball more, you know, the steals are going to be there. The assists are going to be there. And in terms of what it takes to win that award, player of the year, conference player of the year, there's no reason it shouldn't be Gilly. I don't think it would be Tyler Burton. I think again, he's a really exciting pro prospect for them, but I just don't see with the shooting of Sherrod in the scoring Gilliard's going to give you, and really the scoring jumps KO has made, quite honestly, I don't know if the shots are there for Tyler. I think his impact is going to be monumental. He's going to grab a lot of boards. He's going to get a lot of blocks, and he's going to score game to game. I'm not sure there's the room for him to put up those kinds of numbers yet.
So there you go. Noah Goldberg selling us on a potentially very strong NCAA tournament team in the Richmond Spiders. Noah, where can everybody find your excellent work?
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter at NoahGoldberg10. Got some stuff in the works, figuring out, going to be switching up the content a little bit this year. So keep an eye out for some changes, but the content will definitely be churning either way. So go check us out on there.
Always good stuff. Noah's been putting out great things about the Spiders and about the A10 as a whole since the start of this podcast. So thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys.
All right. A big thank you once again to both Anthony Morelli and Noah Goldberg coming on to enlighten us about St. Joe's and Richmond for this upcoming season. And a big thank you to all of you who continue to listen to the 3Bid League podcast. As always, if you enjoyed the show, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. If you have any comments, if you enjoy what we're doing, if you have any guest recommendations, if there's something we could be doing better, you can reach out to us on Twitter at @3BidLeaguePod, or if you prefer, you can shoot us an email, number3bidleague@gmail.com. Everybody stay safe out there and enjoy this final month as the college basketball season is now upon us.